And that's the end of this week's episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. We talked about Ito, a game about getting on the same wavelength. It's kind of like the mind. It's kind of like wavelength. It's about ranking things on a scale of 0 to 100. We talked about Starfarers, Catan the Starfarers Duel, a game about going into space and doing a bit of Catan, but not really. And we talked about Far Away, a game about doing things in reverse order. Emily, have you got any final words?
I cannot believe how perfectly timed that all was. Like, that sounded so grand because for some reason in the background outside there's fireworks going off, and so you were like listing off these games and it's just boo boo. It's like, whoa. And I think that just sums up how good the podcast was,
how good that podcast was.
Gosh.
How good it will continue to be week on week on week on week.
Exactly, because this one's done.
This one's finished. Yeah, it's over.
We've done it all.
Yeah, we have. There's no more podcast left. What else is there to say but goodbye, farewell, and see you all next week for another episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast featuring Tom and Emily.
Goodbye.
Bye. The final game we're going to talk about on this podcast is a little cooperative party game called Ito, designed by Mitsuru Nakamura and published by Arc Light Games. I think this is really nifty. I played this a while ago with some friends and we didn't quite get into it. I have now played it again at the pub a few times, and I think it's quite delightful. This is a mix between the mind and wavelength. So the game itself is literally just a deck of 100 cards labeled 0 through 100 and a little sheet of paper that I guess I'll just call a prompt sheet. The way the game works is you get dealt a hand of one or two cards that will be labeled 0 through 100. I might have 52. And then what you will do is you will roll a dice and determine a category for the round. So, for example, popular locations for a date, with 1 being the most not popular and 100 being the most popular. And then all the players have to do is put their cards face down on that spectrum from 0 to 100 without saying the numbers on the card, and instead just giving clues as to what their card is or roughly what its number might be. So for popular to unpopular, if I had 52, I might say, like, I don't know, maybe I'd say a big walk, for example, right?
I love a big walk.
Yeah, a lot of, and there's the rub already, because, like,
sure,
that's quite a popular one, isn't it? And it's also based on personal taste as well, like all of your own, like, real life experience of these things comes into it as you start arranging these things. Because here's a little magic rule that I think makes Ito quite special, is that you'd think that you just have to come up with one clue and then you put your thing down and that's kind of it, and then you rearrange as you go. But you may, it explicitly says this in the rules, you can change your clue as many times as you want throughout the course of the process. You can, like, switch it based on what other people have said, which makes the game into a pretty hilarious, like, vibes-based shifting... I don't even know how to properly describe it. But you'll have someone be like, you know, someone puts their card down confidently, at the sort of high end of the spectrum, and they say... a restaurant or something like that, and then you realize that, like, oh well, maybe my, like, 52, if, like, 100 is a restaurant, probably the most popular location for a date, then 52 should be somewhere that's, like, actually pretty unusual rather than even approaching standard. And then someone puts, like, you know, I don't know, the a dustbin at the other end, and you're like, oh, and now I need to work out, like, this is not working, this needs to go somewhere else. And you have this constantly shifting thing where people are trying to nudge their guesses or nudge their clues just a little bit up and a little bit down based on the sort of temperature of the table at any given time. I don't know if I've done a great job of explaining that. It's quite weird to get your head around, I think.
It's kind of like, there's, like, less information, but also kind of more communal of the, like, in wavelength when you're having the discussion.
Yes.
And you're kind of, like, making those, you know, extremes up for yourself, you know? You'll be like, oh,
yeah.
Like, oh, well, if it were all the way on this end, it would be, yeah, a restaurant or whatever. If it were all the way on this end, it would be, like... No, I don't know why I said a...
it makes the whole thing into that discussion period in wavelength is normally interesting because you have one person who has the information and they're sort of sitting out of that whilst everyone else kind of like debates around them. This is just a simple change of having everyone involved in all the conversations. Like, you are constantly chatting and you're constantly getting into that. Like, all it is as a game is a discussion generator. Like, all it is people immediately, like, one of the ones that we had was like sort of like celebrity or character crushes. And that was just like a slightly unhinged thing where people were like putting very odd things in there and then everyone having sort of like, you know, these very raucous and silly discussions about, you know, their tastes in cartoon characters or something like that.
What is the end game though? Like, is one person putting them in order of like ascending order? Like, what's the deal?
Oh, so you put them all out like cooperatively, and then when you've decided that you are like, so as a group, once you've decided on your order of the cards, you then flip them all face up, and if you got them all right, then you move on to a second round where you deal out two cards, and then a third round where you deal out three, and you just see how many you can do. Okay. But, you know, it's not exactly a game where you're saying, like, how can, you know, who can get the highest score? We got to get all the points.
Yeah.
It's just a game that you play for as long as you want to play it, essentially. But, like, and it's, I think that nudging and that changing of, like, you know, vibes of what your card is in relation to someone else's is just that, like, that's my favorite part of it, where someone goes, you know, just as something as simple as there's one which is like, I don't know, food you would like to be treated to or something like that, and then someone says like a giant bucket of delicious chicken, and then you look at your card and you're, you know, you assume that your card is incredibly close to theirs, but maybe it's a little bit higher, so you go an even bigger bucket of delicious chicken and then you end up having this like sort of, you know, one-upmanship where you're sort of gently nudging your cards up and up and up, making this, you know, theoretical bucket of delicious chicken larger and larger in your mind. And then someone's like, so then someone lays a big bowl of ice cream in there and you're like, oh, but how, where does that rank? Is that between the two buckets of chicken? Yeah. Or is that better or worse? And so on and so forth.
It sounds fun. It sounds really fun. Yeah, I feel, yeah. I would really enjoy this. It seems like a good way of like getting to know people. I like that sort of stuff.
Yeah, there's actually like little more to say about it other than like, if this concept sounds enjoyable to you, then you will probably enjoy this game. Like, it is an incredibly like straightforward proposition. And maybe this is completely unethical as an unethical board game tip, but if you have a copy of The Mind, you do have a copy of this game. You just need to come up with your own prompts, basically.
Yeah.
Like, there is no real, you know, production to this other than just a nice, it's a very nice production. It's a lovely little deck of cards. And the game comes with some little tokens so you can remember whose card is whose. But, you know, it's sort of approaching like folk game territory over being something that is like a packaged and sellable box, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super simple,
cute.
Super good.
Sounds
good. I think that's literally all I've got to say about Ito. It's just good. It's just nice.
I like the sound. Tom.
Hi.
You've been into space themed games lately, I've heard. You've been playing a lot of Ark.
Yeah.
Some random game that I definitely don't really want and I'm very jealous of you playing.
We should play it on Tabletop Simulator, but we shouldn't talk about it on the podcast, Emily, because I literally have mentioned it in every single piece of Shut Up and Sit Down content for the past like month. It's not healthy.
You've also been playing Dune Imperium a lot, which I know nothing about, and I hear it's okay, I guess.
Yeah, I've heard that it's based on books that you do not like.
I've never read them.
But have also never read.
There's only one, isn't there? I don't know. I wouldn't waste my time on such things. So listen, let me tell you about a little game called Catan, Starfarer's Duel, which is also in space, Tom. It's Catan in space, which is actually pretty funny.
Wow.
Because when I think about Catan, I like exclusively think about it in space, because the version I played over and over and over again during my life is the Star Trek Catan. So like, I only think of it with little spaceships and stuff. And when people talk about it and they're like, oh, I'll trade my wood for sheep, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, you do that, man.
I'll trade my space sheep for
space wood. I'll trade my uranium for space sheep. I couldn't think
of anything
better.
What are the resources in Star Trek Catan?
Oh, I can't remember exactly. There's a green one. There's a red one. There's a white one, which I think is oxygen.
There's oxygen
and water.
There's a Borg. There's a Borg resource. A Borg resource.
Yeah, there's Borgs. There's balls of Borgs.
There's a Cylon.
Yeah. Go on. I've never watched Star Trek, so you could be right.
Oh, okay, good, because I haven't either, and I'm almost certain that a Cylon is wrong, and I thought you would call me out on that, but then it became apparent that you didn't know anything about
Star
Trek.
There's a legendary Picard's hair that you can get, and that just instant win. Instant win.
I see, cool. But this is not Space Catan or Star Trek Catan, because there is Catan. I initially thought this was Catan Starfarer's regular Starship Catan, something like that. But this is Catan Starfarer's Duel, a two-player version of Catan Starfarer's. My goodness, the Catan Expanded Universe is extending beyond the borders we thought were possible.
This is a game designed by Klaus Tuber, Benjamin Tuber, with art from Franz Vollwinkel.
This guy's been around. Franz Vollwinkel's done Puerto Rico. He did Beyond the Sun. He did some like Dominion stuff and The Quest for El Dorado and Ra.
Prolific.
That's so many games. It's so prolific. And now he's lent his talents to Catan Starfarer's Duel.
Oh my gosh. And you know, have you played Catan, Tom?
I've played it once or twice in my time with my family when I was younger.
Now, how about if that game were two players and more complicated? Would you like that? That's what this game
is. I would love that. It does. I mean, I'm looking at pictures of it now, and it doesn't look like Catan at all.
It's like, it's pretty much all that is connected is like the resource management, like buying and selling. Well, do you even buy and sell? I don't know if you do. There's like trading. Yeah, there's not a whole lot that connects this to Catan, but like it has the vibe. There is the vibe there.
It's so funny, like how many layers removed it is from Catan, and yet it still has the Catan name. It's like, it's not about like a hex board with like shared like stuff on it. It's not about like trading sheep and bricks. It's not about like, I don't know, it hasn't got, presumably building like long roads and raising armies and things like that.
And it's got a heavy dose of memorization.
Oh God, so it's like nothing like Catan. Well, and it's also set in space.
Yeah.
Well, but it still has the Catan tagline.
That's the Catan I know. Right. Don't you dare. Don't you slander Star Trek Catan. Yeah, so what Tom's going on about is essentially, like, you have this big starship in front of you, each of you do, you and your opponent. Mm-hmm. And then there's like a mat in between you, which will have four decks. And they are like areas of space to explore. So on your turn, you'll roll this this D6, which is meant to be a D3. This is very annoying. Should I get into this now or should I get into this at the end?
This seems like a pet peeve, so I think you should delve into it right away.
It's not a pet peeve. It's they put the wrong component in there. So it's a D6 with through six pips, and they don't put anything anywhere saying that this die is meant to be a D3. It's meant to be a D6, but like with 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And so we played it multiple times, thinking it's so interesting that these like resources require only like 1, 2, and 3. When are the ones that when we roll a big number that we're going to get it? But and then we're also like traveling so much, silly, which I'll get into. But yeah, they just like put a post online, and I think it's on their website if you go to buy it. But nowhere else can you find that, and I found that very frustrating.
Such a bold, interesting decision for three sides of the dice to just give you absolutely nothing when it comes to resources.
Exactly. But I was like, oh, but you get to travel further, so I guess that's the benefit. Like, I tried to rationalize it in my head. So yeah, with this orange die, it's essentially you roll it. If just like Catan, if it's got a number of like a planet that you've colonized, then you'll get the resource on that planet. But also, you'll add that number that's on the orange die to the amount of boosters your ship has. So you'll start with two boosters, but as you go on, you may add to that. So you add that to the number that you get, and then you can choose one of the decks in the middle of the table, and then you can go through that many cards in that deck of like your boosters plus the dice. So that's like your little traveling. So this is where the memorization comes in, because the decks essentially stay the same throughout the game, apart from like some cards being added and some cards moving. So as you're traveling through each deck, you'll like learn what planets are in there and like, you know, what you're looking for in the future. You'll be like, okay, I know that that's in that deck. So essentially there are
you put them back in order, or do you shuffle?
They get shuffled, but there's so few. I think it's seven in the full game, because there's like modules that you can like you go through, but in the full game I think it's 7, so it's like not that many, so there's a little bit of like a push your luck there, like hoping that you'll get exactly the one that you wanted, but you know it's in there, which is something. But yeah, so there'll be like trade planets, which are ones that, you know, you can give money and you'll get a resource or whatever else. There are target planets, which are like, you can do missions if you get those planets, which is essentially just trading in resources. You'll get a victory point. The aim of the game is to get 10 victory points, just like Catan.
There we go. We're finding the links.
Yeah, exactly. It has the essence. It has the essence, Tom. You can smell it. You can smell it off the game. But then there are also like colony planets, which you can... You can build these little these colonizing ships. Yeah, if it's a colonizing planet, you can use your little colonizing ship. You trade that in, you get that planet, and then in the future, if that number that's on that card comes up, you'll get that resource. You see, that's quite nice.
Right. Yeah,
just like Catan. But how this exploring works, it's like a little bit of player interaction, I guess. It's kind of weak, kind of in terms of player interaction, I find, but. So essentially the traveling, your opponent is like revealing the cards one by one, and it like encourages you to like look at the card beforehand. So I guess it's kind of like you're meant to be bluffing. I don't understand that. I don't think that was very good.
Oh, and you're
meant
to be like oh, you don't want to go to this planet.
Don't wanna be
it's
traveling
stinky.
Next. Yeah. Because the point is you start off with like 2 actions you can take. So you'll get like a planet at the time. If you rolled a 3, you've got your 2 boosters, you'll go through 5 planets. So you'll get that first planet, and you know you've only got 2 actions. So you'll be like, oh, I don't know if I want to use this one or if I want to hope that the next one's better. That's like the...
Gotcha.
Yeah, so that's like the push your luck element. So you're like, oh, I know that in this deck, there is this card that I want, but will it come up? Or should I just use this trash card? So it's pretty fun. That's pretty fun. I think the bluffing thing's a little weak, but it's a pretty fun little idea. There are also other things you can do. Like you can build modules. You'll start off with 2, but you can build modules to like improve your starship. So it can give you more actions to take. Like you can take 3 actions and explore 3 planets or whatever. Or you can build more boosters and that will let you travel further, or you can build cannons, which are dumb and I hate the cannons, and I'll get to that in a second.
Oh boy.
But with the modules, you can also get golden modules, which there's only 1 of each one. And so the 2 players have to like compete for those, and you'll get a point for those, and then you'll also get like an improved thing. So you may do 4 actions, you know? Like it'll be even better than when you improved the last one. But okay, so I'll quickly get to the pirates. I hate the pirates, Tom. I do not like the pirates.
I presume the pirates are Catan : Starfarer's Duel's version of like the robber, potentially, right? You've got to have a little bit of that nastiness somewhere in there. Although, what That's was it correct. Called in Star Trek Catan?
I think that was the Klingons.
The Klingons!
I think so. The pirates don't come in until the final scenario. And it's just, there are a couple things I don't like about it. So the cannons are pretty much useless until you have pirates in the game. And they don't come in until the final scenario. But the asymmetry of the game is that you have a faction each. One of you is a moon faction and one of you is a sun faction. And the sun faction, their whole deal is that they can like improve boosters quicker, which is like so beneficial in every way. Because you can, it's all the traveling, and you can, like, it's obviously good baseline. Whereas the moon faction, their whole deal is improving cannons, which is only good against pirates, which don't come in unless you're playing the full game. And so, like, if you're playing any scenario before the final scenario, it's like one team, like, one person just has such an advantage over the other. I think that's so strange.
Oh, weird.
I think that's so strange.
Yeah.
But the pirates also just suck. Just because it feels so punishing for like no reason. If you beat them, you'll like get a resource, and you'll also get like a little. I don't remember what the icon was exactly, but it's like a little. Yay, you did it.
A little doohickey.
Yeah, which will go towards like the longest road type achievements, right? So it's like you get a bunch of those, you'll get the victory point little thing. But like, if you lose, then it's just like, okay, your turn's done. You don't get to travel anymore. And like, and you might lose a booster or you might lose a cannon. Like the losing is just so, you just lose so much. And the only thing that it is a dice roll for both of you. So you roll the dice for you, you roll the dice for the pirates, and then you just hope. Like the cannons add to it, but like you really just hope. And it just feels so punishing. And I didn't like them at all.
Potentially also like a bit of a like downward spiral where if you lose one roll against the pirates and then they blow up some of your stuff, you're then less likely to be able to regain that momentum too.
That is so true. But look, I understand why they're there. I just feel like in a lot of things with this game, it just feels like there's a lot of like good ideas that weren't refined. And maybe that's not helped by the rule book is pretty hard to pass, and also the dice issue.
Well, the dice thing definitely reinforces that idea of like something just being like overlooked, you know, as you go through. And I think that like the idea of that like sort of slow modular like introduction of new ideas into like a simple game, I like that in theory, but I don't know if I like it in like a competitive game, you know, from the get-go. Like, it works in The Crew where you add in that sort of, like, slow complexity drip where things get, you know, ratchet up because that's something you're experiencing kind of together. But when you start putting that into a game that is directly competitive and also has, like, a sort of a sort of canon final state, it's like, well, I kind of want to just skip straight to that side of things, especially exacerbated if one player just doesn't get to engage in the systems.
You know. I think I can see why they did it, just for the sake of like Star Trek Catan. I've played that a lot with my family, right? Like my parents included, who will never play games. They really enjoy Catan. The full game of this is like a level up from Catan. Like there's more complexity there. So it's like, okay, you kind of want to have those scenarios just to, if you liked Catan, like we'll ease you into it. I understand that. But yeah, I think it's done a little clumsily. I would quite like to play this with like with them. I feel like they could get into it just for the sake of the name, even just to be like, oh yeah, that's a game I know. I will play this. And there's like enough there to where it is fun to play. I will say it's a little bit of a far away, but the far away problem was that it was too polished.
This is a little wonky on the edges. Wonky. No, I like that. That's good. Emily, let me tell you about a little game that I've been playing that's called Far Away.
Please do, boy who's far away.
I am far away. We worked out that I'm very far away. Well, we didn't work out. I worked out. I looked at how far away Australia was and went, wowee, today.
People know general geography.
My geography is lacking, as is my memory. This is a small box card game designed by Johannes Guppy and Corentin Lebrat, with art from Maxine Morin. And our copy is published by Catch Up Games, but you can get it from like literally every publisher on the planet if you look at Board Game Geek. Like, it's published by like 10 different people. This is crazy. This is a drafting and tableau building game where you are going on a journey together, separately. It's unclear. The way this game works is you're playing cards in front of you from this sort of limited hand of three, and each card has like a bunch of symbols on it, as well as a scoring criteria that's most often looking for those symbols. So you might have a little card in your hand, a little square card that says plus 10 points at the end of the game if you've got two rocks and a leaf in your tableau, for instance. And then that card might have like two balls of yarn on it or something like that, right? So all these different symbols combo with different scoring cards that you're playing out in front of you. Each turn, you're just playing one card, and then you're taking a card from the middle of the table from the little market to refill your hand. And then when you've played eight cards, you'll score the tableau that you've built over those eight rounds. So super simple. Literally just take a card, play a card. The cards have scoring criteria on them. Try and combo them well, right?
Yeah.
No.
It sounds
there's
like
a,
it.
There's a twist.
Oh, whoa.
There's a twist. There's
oh
a big, here's comes the twist that I'm going to explain badly.
I'm excited.
In Far Away, you're building your tableau from left to right. Like you're going on a journey and you're seeing these things on your journey. Like you're seeing this little guy, you're seeing this little guy. You're going from left to right on your journey. But at the end of the game, you flip all of your cards face down and then you score your tableau from right to left flipping the cards face up as you go. So those scoring criterias that are like 5 points for every leaf or whatever you have only actually count the cards that are currently face up.
Oh.
So you're scoring your cards in the reverse order that you played them. You're like journeying back through your cards chronologically. And the scoring criteria, like you only score things if their relevant criteria was played after them chronologically, which is weird.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing that actually doesn't seem too crazy when you explain it. It's like, oh, so you just score it in reverse order. But when you're playing the game, like texturally, you're so used to things being like compounding in board games. You're so used to things being like, oh, you play this and then you like stack this on top of it, basically. Mm. And having this sort of weird reverse scoring definitely messes with your brain. And the first time I played it, I just was completely lost and just completely messed up my tableau. I had a nightmare time where it didn't make any sense. My journey was useless. There's a couple of other little systems around the edges here that kind of smooth things out. So like the cards have numbers on the top of them, and playing a low card means that you're going to be the first person to pick a card from the market. In a two-player game, there's only three cards in the market, so you can be quite mean with what you're choosing. Or there might be just an obviously better card out there that you want to get access to first, so you play a nice low card from your hand. But you want your actual cards in your tableau to go in ascending order. You want their numbers to get higher and higher. Because if you do that, every time you play a card that's higher than the previous one, you get these little extra cards that contribute bonus symbols to your tableau and like bonus scoring criteria and stuff like that. And that's all of the rules. Like, I think that you could quite comfortably, if you've just listened to this podcast, you could buy a copy of Faraway right now and you would know how the game works, because there's a good little sheet that explains the iconography and the rules are really simple. It's just a deck of cards. That's the whole game. And I think it's all right.
Oh, after all that, the big twist, and it's all right.
I know, the big...
I was hooked.
You were hooked, and I've betrayed you by doing the classic Shut Up and Sit Down podcast twist, which is that most games that we play are, like, good. They're fine.
Oh, just you wait until we get to Catan. That'll be exciting.
Don't worry, we've got, like, I think Ito at the end will be an exciting cherry on top of our sort of melange of, like, average games. No, I've heard a lot of people being really positive about Faraway on podcasts, and people sort of singing its praises and saying they really like it. And I do think that it is very smart, and it is very clean, and it's very polished. Like, I finished the game, and I said to my friend, I was like, wow, that sure felt like we made 16 interesting decisions. Like, it is just the simplest way that you can get to just making, like, some good decisions, and then you shake hands, and you're done with your game.
Yeah, I get you. But it sounds so, like, it really did hook me. Like, I thought that sounded sarcastic when I said it, but really, like, the idea of having to think that different way of about it, where it's like planning ahead, and then I guess you sort of with the cards that are in the middle that you're choosing from, how often are they cycled out? Like, it, can you actually plan ahead, or is it a lot of I hope that symbol comes up and I'm going to bank on it coming up?
Yeah, that's a good point. In a two-player game, there are three cards in the middle. You both choose one, then you bin them and deal a new row of three.
So it's a lot of hope.
Yeah, there is a lot of hope, but like, you can mitigate against that hope quite a lot with those. You know, I was saying how you get those little bonus cards if you go in ascending order.
Yeah.
The way that you actually take those is that you look at how many of this little map symbol that you have. Like, you start off with like maybe one map symbol, and then you get more map symbols as you build out your tableau and you get more cards. And the more map symbols you have, the more of those little mini cards you get to draw and look at before choosing one. So you can mitigate, if there's like one particular thing you really, really need, you can mitigate against the luck of it by getting a load of those extra, I think they're called sanctuary cards, and like finding the exact one that's right for you because you've drawn so many that the symbol that you want will probably come up somewhere. And I think that's true of like, there is a eye to the distribution of the different symbols being like a little riskier. Like, I think the red symbols are slightly more rare than the blue and the green ones. So when you put one of those scoring cards down, you know that it's inherently a little bit risky, that you might not be able to find that thing. Mm-hmm. It is as much a game about like opportunism and jumping on something and being like, ooh, that'll work with everything that I've, you know, or everything that I've played before or I'm going to play afterwards, rather than necessarily being like, my strategy this game is to build out a load of blue symbols and score a bunch for those. Yeah, because of that scoring, the way that it makes you think about things sort of as on the fly, as your tableau builds out and you're trying to fill criteria in that weird way, I think that it's not necessarily a game about making a big structural plan.
Yeah.
I just don't know whether I necessarily want to bring it out again or play it again anytime soon, because I think that whilst it is sharp and good and an enjoyable little box, I think that, like, in the environment in which I'm playing, like, a small box card game like that, I either want something that's, like, quite intensely interactive and is, like, deliberately, like, either mean or... like, I want the sort of either end of the spectrum. I want something that I'm playing with someone across the table from me to be either, like, super mean and confrontational, mm-hmm. or, like, super cozy and relaxing. Okay. And this fits in this weird, like, middle ground of it has some, like, nasty bits where you take cards away from other people, but it didn't feel like I was necessarily engaging with the person opposite me as much as I would if I was playing a game like, I don't know, Arboretum. And it didn't feel like, yeah. I was just having a nice time doing a cozy puzzle with something like, I don't know, Patchwork, for example.
Right.
It's a weird game, Emily. It's a really odd box.
I am inspired by this box. I think the podcast, as the journey as it is, we should have it all backwards. We should start with Eater, or we should start with the ending, and then put Eater, and then put Catan.
Oh.
We should just have it all played backwards and have people be very confused until they get until this point, and then they're like, oh, I get it.
You know, like, it could work. And yeah, I guess the listeners will know if it worked as an edit, like, right
start
now.
With a goodbye. See you, everyone. And then... So our first game is Eater.
Will I reverse the theme songs?
That'd wow. be great. Yeah, this would be fun.
That would be great. Yeah, let's do it. And then it'll go into the intro. Ah!
Then it'll go into the intro, which was mediocre, like this game. We're being so inspired by this game.
Wow, it's like it's sort of got its roots down, its tendrils throughout this whole podcast.
I'm so surprised that it got published by so many publishers if it's so mediocre.
It's not like, I don't think it's mediocre. Like, I think it is, the thing is that it's good and it's sharp and it's like, it's a nice design. It's very safe. I think it's just like, it has enough decisions and it has a cool little quirky, like, you know, feature that makes you go, ah, cool. But it's not gonna, like, it's no one's favorite game, right?
Yeah.
Like, it isn't something that's, like, risky or bold or weird. It also has, like, a slightly collectible aspect, I think. There are these four different versions of the box that come in different colors, but there's no reason to buy one box over the other, as far as I can tell. It's just if you want four of the same game in different colors.
Is there a reason to have,
do you want,
like,
that?
Duplicates of the same cards? Like, can you expand the game?
In theory, you could play the game, because it goes up to, like, six players, and so in theory you could, because there's, like, no real, like, interaction outside of that market, you could, like, smush two copies together and have, like, a 12 player game of Far Away.
That sounds, like, amazing.
Well, it is one of those things where, like, there is also no real, like, turns other than picking things from the market. It's like you just choose a thing and play it, and then you, like, take on. I think these are all the reasons why it's, like, been published by so many different publishers, is, like, it is easy to pick up, and it also has, like, no downtime, and it's just, like, make decisions and go, like, cool, that was nice, that was nifty, and it's cheap enough that you'd, like, pick it up at a booth, you
yeah.
know, on a whim.
Yeah, I get you.
I just don't know where it fits into, like, you know, when am I gonna be like, you know what I really fancy right now? I really fancy a game of Far Away, blue version or yellow version, you know?
Oh, the yellow version, Pikachu on the cover. I need that one.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very 250th episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. That's 250 episodes.
Oh, my gosh.
And who am I spending it with? Emily from Australia.
Hello. Who are you, though? You haven't even said who
you are. Oh, yeah, who am I? I'm Tom from England.
Hello, Tom.
We're doing another podcast, a 250th podcast. Are we doing anything special for this 250th episode? No. I mean, we're doing something special in that we're spending time together and we're talking about board games, which is a special thing to do. A nice way to spend my Saturday morning and your... Is it Saturday for you still?
Yeah.
Saturday evening.
It's my Saturday evening. I'm spending my Saturday evening locked inside alone talking to you about board games. Isn't that cool?
I realized that when I messaged you and said, hey, I'm sorry, I'm going to be on a train on Friday. Can we do Saturday instead? That I was swapping out your Friday evening podcast record session for a Saturday evening podcast
record
session.
It's okay. It's important, you know? This is important to people. When I listened to this back in like 129, episode 129, and when I was just listening to this for fun, it made my day, you know? It was a bit of routine. Aww. And the people need this. They need it, Tom.
The people need it. You'll sacrifice any evening for the pod, for the people at home, as will I.
Apart from the 13th of April, I'll not be available for that. If you need me for that, no.
Why is that? What are you doing on the 13th of April?
That's my birthday,
is there something,
Tom,
cool, exciting happening? It's what, sorry?
That's my birthday, Tom.
It's sorry, I'm getting crackling. I'm getting interference on the line.
That's my birthday, Tom.
What, sorry? It's your birthday. Do you want people to know that at home, or are you worried that they're gonna send you unsolicited board games in the mail?
I would hate that. Don't send it to this exact address that we're going to put on the Spotify description. Do not send me free stuff. I would hate that.
We're both April. We're both April, children of April.
I know. Yours is the 25th. Isn't that exciting? You can beep that if you want. I remember it.
Oh my goodness. I can't believe you. That's so nice. I'll remember yours now because that's how it works. Like,
no,
an exchange.
You don't
isn't
do
it?
That.
Like, if you remember someone's birthday,
this is a one-way street.
Okay.
Your favorite color is orange. I know that.
Oh, wow. Dang. Your favorite color is purple.
You're the worst. Let's move on. What are we talking about, Tom?
On this podcast, we're going to talk about three games. We're going to talk about Far Away, a tiny little small box card game about going Gondan Journey. We're going to talk about Catan Starfarers Duel. A two-player version of Catan Starfarers that Emily's been playing. And we're going to talk about Ito, a tiny little wavelength-esque box of getting to know your friends and who they are in love with, but only in one particular scenario. That didn't make any sense. Let's move on.
That makes perfect sense.
That was a completely unhinged intro, but you know what? That's fine.
Yeah, I was going to mention it when you were like, we're doing nothing special for the 250th. I'm like, it's we're dropping the ball. That's all we're doing. What is this, New Year's in New York?
We're completely fumbling it. That's what we're doing.